Biggest thing is building trust, because as soon as you have it, everything's gonna work fine. But reaching the point, especially when you have people all around the globe working with you, reaching that point where you trust the person on the other side of optical fiber enough, and so you are comfortable, you know, reaching out to them at any point of time, I think that's the most important thing for me.
From Tuple, this is Distributed, where we show how world-class engineers and their teams tackle the challenges of remote work. I'm Jack Hanna, your host. Let's get to the real work. Hey, everyone. Today, we're speaking with Pavel Gubich, who is a back-end engineer at Spotify based out of Stockholm, where he has served for almost 5 years. And prior to that, Pavel, I believe you spent 6 years in a handful of different roles at EPAM, which is a global software and platform development company, where I think you ultimately served as a lead software engineer based out of San Francisco. And so we're psyched to have you on today.
Yeah. Hello. Thank you. And happy to be here.
It's great to have you on because you and I have had a chance to chat a couple of times over the past year or so. And I know you have some interesting things to say as it relates to remote, in-person, hybrid work and what it means to you as an engineer. And to help the audience orient a little bit, would you mind sharing a bit about your own software journey from maybe where you first caught the software bug to where you are today in your career?
I really started to, be interested in software engineering when I actually only applied to university and started studying. My major was computer science. And for a while, I actually didn't like it that much. I was seriously considering dropping out. But then, I kind of got into that. My first job was when I was still studying, like during my third course. It was EPAM. So like I applied for a part-time job. I got it. And at first I was the front-end engineer, even though like it wasn't necessarily my choice. It was just the first interview and I passed and I said, Sure. Okay, I'm just going to stick with it. It's fine. Like I need to start with something at least. It was tough. I couldn't say I had like any person mentoring me. So a lot of things I had to learn myself. I did a lot of things I had to, to learn hard way. If you've seen my, my first project, like I was the only front-end engineer. I haven't written a single line of tests. I mean, it was a miracle. Like the whole scene was a miracle that it worked. But, I kind of managed and I was, learning a lot of things. I was trying to get promotions at the same time. And at some point, I was offered a relocation to San Francisco. So I landed the project on site with our customers. They relocated us to San Francisco. And there, I slowly transitioned to become a backend, and I loved it much more. And it was also funny because I transitioned to backend through data engineering a little bit. So I kind of, I touched everything. It was fun for a while, but then I felt like I really wanted a full-time position rather than being a contractor, because I was relocated as a contractor, basically. Considering my visa situation, I couldn't stay in the U.S., so I decided to look for jobs in Europe because it was much easier to relocate it, because as soon as you have the job, right, you could just move. And I failed a lot of interviews, like a lot. And I started to, to give up. And Spotify was the last interview. It was, very nice. I nailed it, to be honest. So that's how I ended up in Stockholm, here in Stockholm in Sweden. And I'm here since 2020, still in Stockholm, still at Spotify, learning even more about backend. So yeah, I guess that's my journey.
It seems like your career as a software developer is split somewhat evenly, about 50% in person and about 50% hybrid, which I think is your current setup. Could you share a little bit more about what your current setup is at Spotify?
When I joined Spotify, it was March 2020. So that basically when the pandemic started. And then that's when the whole company actually became fully remote, because everyone had to go to their homes and stay there. Now, Spotify in general operates in hybrid mode. So we have offices where people can work in, but also if you want to work at home, you are free to do that. So my team, I am, I think, the only one coming to the office every day. The rest of my team, they distributed. So I have a couple of my colleagues who are here in Stockholm. Most of them now are in London, including my manager, and we have also a product manager in Dubai.
Well, I want to better understand that relocation to San Francisco And then we'll jump back to maybe some of the questions that we have prepared. So you were working at EPAM for a number of years, and then you had the opportunity to relocate for a project that was on site at the customer's location in San Francisco. What was it like moving across the world for work, for this project, to work in person with a client?
Yeah, it was overwhelming, to be honest. My first impression when we flew all the way to San Francisco, we got a cab to go to our to the apartment, which the company got for us. I felt a bit like I was in GTA, you know, because it was like exactly the impression I had of USA, like the same, like this GTA San Andreas. It was so surreal because USA, it's very different country compared to Belarus, like a very different, you know, style of living. And then I also had to work in a company where like everyone was speaking English every day, because before in Belarus, like my first language is Russian. So I had to change the language, had to change the work environment, had to change the country. Yeah, it was definitely overwhelming. But also I was super young. So, you know, it was also very, very inspiring. Like, I think now I'm not sure that I could pull this off again. Like if I need to move across the globe again somewhere to change my life again, to change all the habits again, my colleagues, the environment, the weather, the, you know, the climate, I don't think I can handle that. But back then it was, you know, frightening, but very inspiring at the same time.
Yeah. What inspired you about that experience?
You know, the complete change of environment. And I think personally, I always had this idea in my mind that I want to move abroad, at least for a while. And, you know, it was kind of a dream, not like the USA specifically, but just moving abroad and like moving abroad, like away from my, you know, usual conditions, and to see what it's like, to see with my own eyes. And also, personally, it felt like a big step for my career as well, because, you know, like USA, like especially San Francisco, is like, it's a center of software engineering, right? So the best I could wish for 100% back then.
And I think that is one of the beauties of remote work and its popularity, is that you don't have to do this as often. You know, there's so many more opportunities out there where you can stay where you are and continue to work for that company in a new capacity, or work for a new company based out of someplace else. But despite stereotypes, I think, at least based on prior conversations you and I have, you're one of the several engineers I've spoken to who actually does prefer working in person, consistent with the fact that you said you're maybe the only engineer on your team who goes into the office almost every day. And I think that this perspective, the developer, the engineer who prefers working in person, is underrepresented in the public discourse about return to office, about remote, hybrid, and in-person work. And so I'd love to unpack this a little bit, and we can start by challenging my assumption. Do I have that right, that you do, in fact, prefer working in person?
100%. Like, I'm a strong proponent of in-person work. Not to mix with the fact that I'm opponent of remote work, because I'm definitely not opposing that. But in office or remote, like, I would always pick an office.
Why is that?
I think for me personally, I just, you know, love that I have a dedicated space which is designed for me to work. It's a place where I can come, I can focus on my work, I can focus on collaborating with my colleagues and take advantage of all of the perks office gives me for free. Even if it's just a cup of coffee, but the fact that I don't have to think about it and it's just, they are available to me. You know, personally, it brings me a lot of joy and removes some of the routine stuff otherwise I had to do at home. I guess it's one aspect to that. It would be fair to say that it greatly helps that I also live in Stockholm, where we have amazing public transportation, and commuting to office, for me, it's super easy. Like, it takes like 20, 25 minutes. I get to see the city, which is also like, I really enjoy. It's very beautiful. I'm lucky enough to live near the ferry, and I actually sometimes I take the ferry to work, you know, which, you know, elevates the commute experience, like, you know, twofold. Another aspect is definitely the social one. Luckily, even though I'm the only one from my team coming to office every day, like I have a teammate, they come like every once in a while, roughly once a week sometimes. So we, you know, get our chance to socialize. But mostly socialize with the colleagues from my department, which, to be honest, turned out to be great, because I don't think I would have talked to them as much otherwise, like maybe only on work related stuff when we have to do some cross team collaboration. But now I take advantage of those people being with me in the same room, in the same building. We go to lunches together and we, you know, try to get to know each other outside of, you know, work, but just, you know, we talk about stuff and then we also become friends. We, you know, go to some activities together. Yeah, so that's great, 100%. Probably the main motivation for me to come back to office as soon as possible was actually pandemic. And when you were forced to stay at home, I felt so rejuvenated when offices opened back. Like I was so excited to come back and actually not to stay at home every day. And I could find, and it was also an opportunity for me to turn my, you know, working desk back to my gaming desk, because usually I usually only use it for playing computer games. But now I had to share it with work, and now, you know, it's not only a place where I relax, but where I have to do stuff, and that is not that enjoyable anymore. So like having a dedicated place where it's only about work and nothing else for me, that was, you know, definitely affected me mentally in a very positive way.
Yeah, it sounds like this separation between your inside of work and outside of work life and having a dedicated space, a dedicated distinct spaces for both, feels pretty important to you.
Yeah, it's 100% very important. Like, I don't think I'm very good at managing my work-life balance where both my life and my work are physically in the same space. Funny enough, my partner now, she also works for Spotify. And, you know, so if we both stay at home, we just nonstop work and we just talk about work all day long. I don't like this at all. So for me, you know, making like a clear distinction between my home and my work, for me, that's important.
You talked about the work-life balance stuff, but could you explain a little bit more about why this stuff matters to you?
When it's all together, it's kind of, you cannot really detach from your work. And, you know, then the boundaries, they become a bit blurry. And you just sometimes find yourself, you know, working late without any good reason to do so. Because like, what does it matter? I'm in front of my laptop. I just will continue doing so and maybe a bit more. And maybe I need to do some chores, but I don't, like, I could, you know, wash the dishes with my right hand, with my left hand. I could continue coding, something like that. And then it accumulates all the fatigue. Yeah, I guess that's the main reason. So it's really hard to, you know, to say to yourself, okay, I need to stop. And I actually now need to do homely things at my home, you know, relax, read a book, you know, socialize with my partner, you know, play a game, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that resonates a lot. I was actually interviewing Kent Beck for the show, and he talked about this distinction as well. I think he described it using a circle, which is to say that when you come to work, you enter the circle, and there's many different ways to enter the circle, but having some sort of ritual where you're able to make that mental transition from person outside of work to worker makes a huge difference in your ability to create the separation and therefore avoid burnout. Because if you're giving work 100% of your effort, you need to rest outside of work in order to come back and do it again each day, each week, each month, what have you. And so it sounds like for you, the best way to do that is by having these distinct spaces where you come into the office to get the work experience, to make that transition from person in the world to person at work, and then having your distinct space at home to, you know, make that other transition back where you can decompress and relax.
Yeah, 100%. Like, having a ritual definitely helps. Like, when you started talking about circles, like, another analogy which popped out in my head, like, sometimes when you, in computer games, when you switch between different locations and you have, like, a loading screen, I mean, so that's something like that. So when you leave home, like, you're basically changing the map to something else, and then mentally you're adjusting that, okay, I'm going to do something new, I'm going to explore, like, a new location, I'm going to do completely different things. And then loading screen ends, you enter office, boom, now you're doing quests. Okay, you need to finish this amount of Jira tasks, so forth and so on. And then the opposite process when you go back home. And when you come home, okay, I have a different quest now. Like, I need to, I don't know, make my bed or like cook a dinner or something like that. Yeah. 100%, yeah.
I like that because in general, I hate waiting and loading screens annoy me, but it is useful to have some bit of loading screen so you can load the mental bandwidth and be like, all right, I'm geared up. I'm ready to do this quest. I'm ready to do this thing. So yeah, I like that.
100%.
Maybe you've talked about this a little bit, but I want to ask it directly. What's the toughest part about working remotely for you personally?
I think it's building trust with your coworkers. I think when it's remote, it's definitely possible. Like, and I've seen it work, and it definitely worked out for me. But I think it takes more time. I think especially when you join a new team, or maybe like when the whole team is new, it just has been assembled, like from different people. Like you're naturally a bit shy, and I think, you know, this shyness, it only, you know, elevates when you're remote, because having like a natural conversation, it's still a bit harder, even though now we have like amazing tools for collaboration and for talking with each other. Like, you still don't see like a person like completely, their body language, and maybe sometimes people don't use cameras. That would also happen for different reasons. Maybe, you know, I mean, that could happen. And you know, building the trust, which is, I think, essentially what you really want in a team. So you completely trust each other, so you're not afraid to fail, so you could be vulnerable about like stuff you don't know, so forth and so on. I think it takes much more time, and definitely something I struggle with myself.
Yeah. Could you share some examples of how that played out, the difficulty building trust when working remotely, perhaps when joining a new team or in any other context where you've experienced that?
Yeah, I think when I just joined Spotify, and like, again, it was the beginning of pandemic, like it was very new for everyone, right? And it was very weird because like I had like at some point a lot of one-on-ones, they were all online, and then hard to have like a cohesive like experience and to, you know, get to know people in a good way, because like for every small conversation you want to have, you have to find the time in the calendar. Now you cannot just come to a person, talk to them, or maybe you go to lunch together, or maybe you go get a coffee together, or maybe simple thing as you walk to the metro station together and, you know, have a chat. Like, you don't have that anymore. And so all this time, which before you could have used for getting your colleagues better, now you just sit in front of the screen and you just work and, you know, try to figure stuff alone, basically. Even though, you know, there are so many tools to talk virtually, you cannot guarantee that the person will be always there. That's the nature of asynchronous communication. You kind of have to allow time to respond. Yeah, and I mean, that's the reality now, but that definitely slows down getting to know each other.
Yeah. So what do you do about that? Like, you obviously come into the office now, though you didn't have the opportunity to do so when you first joined Spotify. So what are some tactics or tips that you've learned from caring deeply about this thing and having to navigate not being able to do it in the same way that you might have previously at EPAM?
So first thing we have now in our team, which we adopted from the previous one I've been, like, no, personally, some of my colleagues have been, is like every time we have a stand-up, which usually you tend to have every day. So at some point we decided that's a great opportunity to dedicate some of the time to actually just talking, not about work, but about some stuff. And usually what we have a person every day who comes up with an icebreaking question. And it could be anything you want. It could be very generic, but it could be also very personal. Especially it works great when you're at a point where you already know each other enough, you could get to, you know, stuff which is a bit more hard to answer, hard to think of, you know, trying to be a bit vulnerable, that really, you know, opens up people from a different perspective. And basically 10 to 15 minutes of our stand-up time just dedicate to that, and we just talk and we know each other better, and maybe we learn something new, because sometimes we'll come up with silly questions like would you fight like 100 toddlers or like 100 geese, like, you know, because why not? That's a perfect topic with your morning coffee, right? You know, that works really great. Another thing we have, it's a Swedish tradition called fika. So what is Fika? It's basically a dedicated time for your colleagues where you gather together, usually with some coffee, also sometimes some sweets, pastries, cookies. And again, you just, you know, do what you want. You drink coffee, you socialize. It's also maybe like 15 to half an hour. You could do it as often as you want. Like personally, we do it every week. We usually also take this time and we play some games together. For instance, we play Scribbly or Gartic Form. You know, it helps building a community and building trust, of course, because as soon as you start to see people not only during work, but during basically like normal environment. I mean, it's hard to call it like like super normal, but in our time, it's already, you know, the norm. Yeah, you grow some empathy toward your colleagues and eventually trust and
Okay, so you named two practices, stand-ups, including some non-work talk at the beginning, 10 to 15 minutes each stand-up, and then Fika, which is sounds like it's a Swedish tradition where it's dedicated colleague time centered around, well, I should say, organized around some coffee or some food where, again, the focus isn't explicitly around work. Sometimes you play games like Scribbly or whatever it might be. And for that practice, it's like 15 to 30 minutes one time per week. So how long are your stand-ups if the first 10 to 15 minutes are this icebreaker question?
We usually have them half an hour every day.
Okay.
Yeah, and we have enough time for everything, to be honest. Even though basically half of the stand-up we just talk, you know, it kind of gets you in the mood. You're not sleepy anymore. You get some energy just from, you know, talking to people, learning something new, or like maybe share a laugh over something.
Do you mind sharing a story of a time where a team that you worked on really broke down and its communication and the way that the team worked together?
It's the current team I'm working in. So we started, you know, being a team a bit more than 2 years ago at this point. And it was a mix of people who worked with each other before and who just joined. And so basically it led to a situation where, like I mentioned before, that you don't have a lot of trust in the beginning, right? And it takes time to build it. That process, I don't think it was going so well. I cannot really think of any specific reason, like apart from, you know, people, you know, being a bit shy and maybe a bit on the introvert side. I consider myself an introvert, so even though like I sometimes could socialize a lot, but if I do that, definitely I need like a couple of days to rest. Sometimes I'm not like actively seeking for any, you know, conversations. I'm just, you know, trying to do my job and that's it. And I think that happened for us for a while as well. So what does it lead to? What did it lead to? I think it led to a situation where every person individually were doing like a great job. So on paper, we were doing a lot of things. But as a team, we basically had no cohesion. We're doing random things which were not really connected to each other. It was really hard to say whether as a team we are trying to achieve any goal at all. It was, you know, we were just robots who were just, you know, pulling tickets from one column to another. And it didn't feel great. So if you ask any person back then, if you were to ask any person in the team, like, what is our goal? I don't think anyone would have like a clear answer, maybe apart from, you know, our senior engineers. If you ask like other team members, I mean, I work on tickets and that's it. I think we realized after several retros that, I mean, it's not working well. We have too much of context switching, definitely. There are too many things together and it doesn't seem efficient. It doesn't seem productive, even though on paper we do a lot of work.
I'm curious, like, what was going on when you first noticed that that's how it felt, or that's what was going on?
It was actually hard to articulate first, that you kind of understand that you don't have a lot of connection with your colleagues and with the things you do, but you don't quite understand why, like what the exact reason. Like, it was really hard to articulate it specifically, I think. I don't think I was the first one to notice it, to be honest. I think it was my colleagues who then throw out an idea that we do too many things at the same time, which ultimately doesn't really allow you to focus and to understand. Like, I guess the easiest example would be that if someone shows a PR, then you have to spend half of your day trying to understand what's happening there. what was the reason for that. It also accumulated a lot of fatigue, because I think context switching would be like the best way of describing it. So you had to learn new things which then deemed to you, you know, really unnecessary, and on touch things which deemed unnecessary.
In other words, when you were reviewing other people's PRs, when team members were reviewing each other's PRs, it was taking so much time just to understand the context of their work that you started to realize, wait, we're context switching a lot. We don't really understand what each other are working on. And this is particularly fatiguing or tiring or, yeah, I don't know. What sort of feelings did that lead to?
Yeah, I think it, like all of that you mentioned, like tiredness and fatigue. But I think the biggest feeling I would say was that, you know, just sense of belonging, it was not there. Because you just work on something and you don't really know the reason for that. I mean, you understand it technically, but at the same time, since there are too many of those, right, and you have to think of too many things at the same time, then it kind of all blurs in your mind. It becomes like one big clump. And yeah, it's really hard to, you know, to make sense out of it. And I think after several retros, we kind of figured it out. And we talked about it and we realized, okay, there are too many things which are happening simultaneously. One of the solutions which came out, that was something we actually incorporated in my previous team, as the first one I joined, when I joined Spotify. So in my previous team, since we had to develop a completely new product, we decided, one of the senior engineers back then proposed that we should implement everything during mob sessions and no other way. So basically, he manifested that we are doing zero individual work, and everything we do together on a mob session meeting. And so I decided to propose something similar, but I decided that it should not be that extreme, and that it should be we should do it voluntarily, and I didn't want really to force anyone. But people were okay with that. People were like, yeah, let's try that. Let's try to do more by doing less. And actually, I think it worked great. We tried to also to promote collective work and work on things together. So which basically reduced the amount of things in parallel to almost like only one thing at a time. But I think it actually accelerated our productivity immensely. I think the main benefit of all of you working on the same PR and also switching sites, obviously that's one of the things you have to do during mob session. You also have to switch sites so everyone has an opportunity to code. One of the benefits is everyone knows what's going on. You virtually don't have to review any PRs because everybody already participated in the process of writing code. So, and then during PR, you just focus on, you know, on the typical mistakes you have. Maybe you miss configuration, maybe some style problems, because you already know what happened in this PR because you kind of worked on it and you don't have to validate it one more time. You already trust it enough so it could go to production. And I think we basically ended up doing much more things than before. And it was much more fun because we were always together in the same room and virtual room, of course. And it also facilitated some, you know, outside of work conversations, because, you know, while someone coding, someone would crack a joke, someone would just tell about their day. And, you know, it was just a lot of fun. And I think we shipped a lot of things when we were doing so. It was great. So mobbing sessions, they really helped us.
Yeah, to get into the details a little bit, how big was the team? How big was and how long were the typical mobbing sessions?
Yeah, so the team back then, I think it was around 5 engineers.
Okay.
More or less. I don't remember the exact number. I think we ended up doing we dedicated a specific time slot in the calendar, because at first it was just on a whim. Like, hey, I'm starting a mobbing session, come join me. And then people would join. And then again, there wasn't no strict rule that you have to join. If you want to do some individual work, please go ahead and do that. That's totally fine. But most of the time we were mobbing. It would take, definitely considering that you also have different meetings during the week and rituals, it would maybe in total not more than 3 hours.
So each session would be no more than 3 hours long?
In total, because you would have a lunch break and maybe, again, some rituals. You go and do them. I think so, around 3 hours in total every day, more or less.
I guess, could you speak to Spotify's culture around collaboration and mobbing and pairing?
Spotify just promotes creativity and collaboration and being, kind to each other and empathetic in general, like an open and accepting culture, which naturally, promotes conversations, which promotes collaboration. I think most of the team, I've been only in two teams, but they were changing regularly. And I think people by themselves were, quite open enough to participate in such activities. There is like a very great article in Klarna Engineering blog. I think it's called Architecture Golf. And basically that's a technique where you work together in it as a team to either design a new system or try to understand how an already existing system works. So basically what you need to do, you need to gather a team, you need to have like a whiteboard, virtual or real one, doesn't really matter. And then, so you like have a system, you either design or try to understand. And the idea is that every person, you take turns, first person just starts with putting one single box on the whiteboard, which is probably a part of the system, some component of the system. And then what you do, you put it and then you're done. Then you give a pen, a virtual pen, to a second person, and then they need to continue your diagram with the only, and the context you have is basically the context you received from a previous person.
Yeah, that one component that's drawn on the screen.
Yeah, and you need to continue. So the tricky part here, you might or might not know what the hell is going on, because there are situations where you originally designed it and you know exactly what you need to put, but you could be in a situation where I'm a new joiner here and I don't understand at all what's happening. But that's okay. You need just to take your best guess and continue drawing. And then, and obviously you also, as a team, you're also allowed to have a discussion on trying to get more context or clarify why a specific box was placed or written there. But then it all ends with a person who is now in charge of a pen to put a box, or maybe like usually the constraint I like to introduce, a box and a line, because you sometimes want to connect boxes. So box and a line. You put it on the board and then you continue until you have the complete diagram. And basically it promotes communication because you, especially for people who don't understand and who didn't have any prior knowledge about the system, and you kind of have to talk about it and describe it in the best possible way. And so it's great for knowledge sharing. We had to design like a small component for auditing. So easy to design a new system using Architecture Golf. We were super surprised. I think we came up with almost like a perfect solution using this technique. And I think also it really helps to remove some of the stress from your senior engineers who are usually, in charge of such stuff. You could share with the whole team, even with the members who maybe they don't know enough about the topics, but even they didn't know, they would learn much more. Just the idea that you don't have to have any prior knowledge, you don't have to know anything, you don't have to read anything beforehand. You could just, participate as an equal member of a designing team. But
yeah, that sounds like a fun exercise. I'll have to get that article from you to also share in the show notes, because I think folks would benefit from that. Is that a regular practice that you all do, or do you do it ad hoc? Tell me more about the ritual.
Yeah, we made it regular now. We don't do it too often because it's not like you have to design a new system every day, obviously. Right. So we have it every month. But sometimes if we don't have anything to design right now, we don't have a system which we don't understand because we didn't inherit something from some other team, we could just keep it or maybe turn it into a mob session instead. That could also happen. But sometimes it works great when we need to actually, work on something new. It helps a lot.
And how long are those sessions usually?
You could make it as long as you want. For us, we made it 1 hour. Sometimes it's enough, sometimes it's not. So sometimes you need to follow up.
Yeah. That's cool. I like that. Well, we are coming up on time. I'm just going to ask a couple of rapid fire questions and then we'll wrap. What is one question about remote or hybrid work that you don't yet have the answer to?
Yeah, that's a tough one. But I think how to make hybrid really work. Because I think being fully on site works great and you don't have to think about it too much, how to make it work. Same with remote. Being 100% remote, I think also works great and everyone has the same expectations of how the process is going to go. But hybrid, I think, is challenging because hybrid could unintentionally create a lot of bubbles because you may tend to only talk to people who are the most accessible to you. And you need to be mindful of that and have like a good technique of, you know, going outside of your bubble and make sure that everyone feel included, but also not losing the benefits of both on-site and remote work. I think that's very challenging and I don't yet have a clear picture in my head how this should work.
Well, we've talked about some of the tips or things that you do to make in your version of hybrid work better. I'm wondering if there's any specific tips that we've either already covered that you want to highlight or things that we haven't yet spoken about that have made hybrid work better for you personally.
Biggest thing is building trust, because as soon as you have it, everything's going to work fine. But reaching a point, especially when you have people all around the globe working with you, reaching that point where you trust the person on the other side of optical fiber enough, and so you are comfortable, you know, reaching out to them at any point of time, I think that's the most important thing for me.
Yeah. Well, we didn't talk a lot about how to go about doing it. Do you have any quick tips on things you can do to help build trust, aside from the fact that it's important and you should focus on doing it?
Yeah, I think when you're building any kind of relationship, you need to find a side of a person which you could be empathetic about. And I mean, it's a hard job, to be honest, right? I think it's everybody's job at the same time. So everyone has to make an effort, which could be hard. Like, I could acknowledge that, like, especially like, again, in hybrid mode, me like coming to office, like I still have like a specific set of expectations that I will just have just a person on my right hand. I could talk to them and that's going to be enough. But probably a person sitting at home, they would expect that you will have like a calendar full of one-on-ones and you will try to get to know each other. So you need to be mindful of that. You need to probably set expectations right in your team on how you're going to do that. And it probably will be a bit tricky to start with that in your team, that, hey, let's find a way of all of us to communicate with each other in a way which would be comfortable for everyone and which would, you know, not make us best friends, of course. I mean, it's okay to have boundaries and not being friends, but building trust, find a way how to build trust. Probably, especially if you're in a team, trying to start with that, I think it's important.
Yeah, and a couple of things that we did talk about that could lead you down that path include things like Fika and, you know, introducing some sort of icebreaker question into your stand-up that can be as silly as, would you rather fight 100 toddlers or, 100 ducks or whatever it was, geese, to something more intimate or personal about their outside of work experiences, whatever it might be.
And I think another important thing here is that could also lead to a lot of fatigue, and you also, I think, you need to be open about that. And you need to be mindful about that because sometimes too much communication is also bad for you. It's very draining. And also people have different personalities. Some people can talk like, you know, 24 hours a day and be fine with that. Some people need some rest. So you need to be very, very mindful of that and respectful of other people's boundaries.
Well, I think with that, we're going to wrap up here. Pavel, thank you so much for being generous with your time and perspectives. It's always fun catching up, and I appreciate you sharing some of this stuff with your audience. If folks want to learn more about you or any of your work, where should they go?
Yeah, thank you, Jack. Yeah, it was really fun. I couldn't say like I'm very active online. I guess the best way would be LinkedIn. That's it. So I don't have like a fun GitHub account or anything, unfortunately. So yeah.
Well, thank you again, Pavel. It was great having you on, and hope you have a great start to your new year.
Yeah, same to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on Distributed. If you want to learn more about what we covered in this episode, or if you want to share your own thoughts, follow @Tuple on X or visit distributed.fm.